Today's episode of the Film Stage Show is brought to you by MUBI, the online streaming cinema. For your free 30-day trial, all you got to do is go to MUBI.com/filmstage. Back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show, the official podcast of filmstage.com. As always, I'm your host, Brian J. Rowan, and with me today we have Michael Snydell.
Hello. What mall did you get that from? Or what strip club did you get that from?
I don't remember where I heard this song. It is the Nicky Barr Band. And the only YouTube video I was able to find is like a live recording that someone took at what appears to be like a basement show, and they just overlaid the MP3 track that they ripped from the CD over it. So I don't know. Shout out to the Nicky Barr Band, unknown treasure of just real awesome grungy like basement rock. Anyway, Bill Graham, what do you think of this song?
I like it. I think it fits.
Yeah, I don't know. I was. It's one of those songs that like I heard once and maybe didn't even hear all of it. And I just like every once in a while I'm like, you know, it's a song that I should just blare as loud as I can. And it's just there's something I guess there's something like weirdly sex positive about like this song that's just so fucking like open and overt about what this woman wants.
All right.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting such a sincere response. I'm kind of pleasantly surprised with how you rationale that.
I am. I'm glad that you're satisfied, I guess, with what I came up with. Anyway. So yeah, that's our opening song. Today we are talking about The Untamed, which is out for your viewing pleasure now. It is quite a movie. It is co-written and directed by Amant Escalante. And it is a foreign language film, so when we get to the trailer, you know, just roll with it. Roll with it, American listeners. Anyway, before we get into all that, let me remind you all, we can be found on Twitter at Filmstage Show, on Facebook, The Filmstage Show. Email us, podcast@thefilmstage.com. And as always, feel free to give us a comment and a rating on iTunes. Go to patreon.com/thefilmstageshow to give money to our little endeavor so that we will be able to create more wonderful episodes for your listening pleasure. And I feel like that's about it outside of the usual movie plug. Anything else going on, gentlemen? Mike?
Yeah, actually, I do want to.
You missed.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Justice League.
Oh no. I actually had planned to see it, and I actually spent money for those tickets, but we were unable to go. But on a serious note, I actually got to meet two fans who came to Chicago. Who I'm not sure whether I should call their name out because that feels weird to do.
Why don't you give a first initial?
Sure. First initial.
Yeah. So like I would be B, you would be M.
Okay. Sure. Their names were T and W, and they reached out to me and said they were coming to Chicago. And so I was able to show them Deep Dish at Geno's East. And then they went to the wonderful Music Box and went to see Suspiria. I couldn't go that night, but it was really great meeting fans and to find out that people actually listen to the show, which is still surreal every time. But I just want to say it was really great meeting them. And yeah, if you're coming to Chicago, reach out to me, and I promise I'll try to be a little less of an asshole than I come off on here.
He'll try to pretend like he likes at least that one moment that he is seeing you during. Speaking of our fans and our conversations with them, when you join our Patreon, you get access to our Slack channel and you can talk to us up front there. Not only that, but you get entered into some cool raffles and stuff. And in fact, we're giving away copies of The Untamed. So if you,
wow.
Yeah. So if you hear us talk about it and are like, man, I'd love to see that for free, then just become a Patreon subscriber. Give as little as $1 an episode and you could win The Untamed. And with the raffles, the way these things go, if you reach out to us and actually tell us that you want these things in your life, then you will actually get your name entered a couple of extra times so that we're sure that we're not just giving away stuff to people who have absolutely no interest in it. We're also going to, apparently, because we reached one of our goals, be doing some classic movie reviews. This month, we're going to be talking about the movie Stalker. And then next month, you two are finally going to watch It's a Wonderful Life.
Aww. Yeah. I can't wait.
Or we're only going to watch it and then talk about it again.
And you guys are assholes. Yeah, so that's the kind of cool shit that we're going to be able to do now that some people are stepping up and helping us out monetarily. And we can do even more of it if you go to patreon.com/thefilmstageshow. Also, speaking of people who support us, MUBI, the online streaming cinema. Every day MUBI introduces a new awesome film for you to check out. And you are able to watch that film for 30 days. You can download it to your mobile device, watch it on your smart TV, watch it on your PC, your laptop, or your smart TV. I say that because I do that most of all, and it is amazing. The MUBI app is the best on the market, especially after Hulu went and gone and did something stupid and fucked up their app royally. We're always talking about how Netflix makes it nearly impossible to find anything on Netflix. They put out Mudbound, apparently a very good film.
Yes.
I don't know. Haven't seen it. Can't find it. I'll figure it out. You would think that they would put these things right up top. But anyway, MUBI.
It was up top for me.
I don't know what's going on.
Same.
Maybe, maybe like my daughter's viewing habits are affecting mine.
that could be a case. I don't know why you don't have different accounts.
I do have different profiles. She gets the kids one.
So she's not a big fan of like virulently, oh damn it, extremely racist period pieces.
No. Well, I don't know. Maybe. We'll have to see what she thinks of the original Dumbo.
Jesus.
Disney
boy.
Burn? Anyway, MUBI. All you got to do for a free 30-day trial is go to MUBI.com/filmstage, and you will be able to experience the wonder that is MUBI. Again, that is MUBI.com/filmstage. But that is all for now. So without further ado, gentlemen, let us talk about the new film from director Amat Escalante, and that is The Untamed.
Es lo más hermoso que vas a ver en tu vida. En el universo, probablemente. Nada va a volver a ser igual.
¿Sabes el lugar exacto donde te atacó?
¿Te gusta el sexo?
A todos, ¿no?
All right. The Untamed. I am going to hand over movie summary rights for The Untamed to IMDb because I'm not sure exactly how to describe this film. So according to the Internet Movie Database, which is, it says something that is, maybe even a bit of a spoiler. You know, I don't know. I'm just going to say how this movie begins. We are introduced to a series of characters in various states of romantic disrepair, and we are introduced to their lives, and then some stuff happens that violently upends whatever expectations you may have had going into this movie. Because I don't know. This thing, I knew nothing about this movie going into it, and so when...
Same.
when a certain character was introduced, I was like, what in the fucking hell is that? But like, it's all over any like blurbs or stuff that you can find about this.
Sure. If sure. you Google this movie, all you'll see is just like, oh, blah, 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 blah. And you're yeah. like, yeah. oh, okay. All like, right. That's what this movie's about.
I was interested in it specifically because of that and because of like, vague relations to another movie. And to be fair, actually, regardless of what we think, actually, the film stage review is a really good review, but that reviewer actually loved this movie.
Interesting. Yeah, I read the RogerEbert.com review, and I was a bit surprised when they just said, speaking of blank, here's three paragraphs about it. And I was like, oh, so that's just a known entity. That's like a known quantity that we're chasing down. That's fine, I guess. Why not? So we'll probably get into it. I don't know how long this whole episode's going to be, but I would say that the spoilers section is going to be longer, and we're going to have probably an abnormally short non-spoiler section. So let's kick it off with our usual one word thing whenever we're up against a movie like this. Gentlemen, in a single word, should people see this? Michael Snydell.
Nope.
All right, Bill Graham.
Yeah.
God damn it. Is that going to be a thing? you and goddamn Matt Singer with your, and I guess Dan Mecca with your yep. Aquaman. Yeah.
Wait, I need to ask, do they actually say Booyah in Justice League? Is that a thing that happens?
Yeah, Cyborg does.
Yep.
It is 2017, right?
Yeah, it feels awkward.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you think about it, I don't know, well, this is dumb, but let's talk about it for a second. So Batman v Superman, you know, I think Man of Steel takes place whenever it came out, and then BVS DOJ took place like maybe a year after that. And then
Department of Justice.
Yeah, exactly. And then JL takes place not too long after that. So it's very possible that it's taking place in like 2015.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Still Booyah is, it's, yeah, it's been that's out, like it's 8 years old.
For a while. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, let's move on to The Untamed. So Bill Graham, you said, an Aquaman style. Yeah. And I'm going to answer by going, I don't know.
That's more words than one.
He just made it into one word.
You can't pop those words into a microwave and just like blend them together. That's not
first of all. You don't blend things in a microwave, Bill. You blend things in a blender.
Whatever. I still love that description, although it made no sense.
Pop them in a bowl, throw them in the microwave, melt them together, maybe.
Just a mush.
Yeah. No, I'm going to say,
how about this? Depends on what kind of company you keep.
Yeah, don't watch it with your. Yeah, this is like if you're about to go to Thanksgiving and your family does a thing where you all sit down. Yeah. Like, don't do it. If you got real nothing awkward. To do, if you got nothing to do for like 2 hours, how long is this movie? This movie is an hour and 40 minutes. If you got nothing to do for an hour and 40 minutes, you can do worse. You know, maybe gather some friends and you'll have a conversation. I don't think it's a particularly good movie, but I think it's a singular film that you might get some discussion fodder out of. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm going to stick with that. I'm sticking with my uncertain squeal. I don't know.
All right.
Anyway, so let's talk about it. Again, we'll use spoilers to our discretion, but like I said, this opening salvo should be pretty brief. Michael Snydell. You don't think people should see this. Why is that?
Yeah, you know what? I'm just not really buying what this is selling in the sense that I think I want to be fair. That is really me saying I don't really want what this movie is, which is kind of a weird split between kind of a relationship drama that I found very unsatisfying and kind of a way more interesting, sort of lurid kind of addiction / supernatural story. Yeah, again, I guess I can't really go more into that second half. But I guess the thing is just that, you know, I think Escalante is a very confident director. And I do have to give him some props for willing to leave a lot of things in the air, whether it be recurring kind of tracking shots through back alleys that aren't explained, or, you know, like, this is a movie that really does feel very thick with atmosphere and a sense of just this intangible something in the air. And that's compelling for a little while, but I just think that where this actually wants to go and the ways it wants to play with fluidity and shame and sexual fluidity and shame and and I don't know, like, the nature of, like, predatory like sexual impulses, like, this actually still makes the movie sound a lot more active than it is. But yeah, I found it very unsatisfying by the end, and I wish that it did actually go all the way with something much pulpier. Which I can speak to exactly what I want from this in spoilers.
All right, Bill Graham.
Sure. What to say about this film? I had no idea what I was getting myself into by the time I started it. About 10 minutes in, I quickly Googled it, and I was like, what the fuck is this movie about?
You pulled the people in front of me during the killing of a sacred deer.
yeah, exactly. I was like, what the hell am I about to watch? You know, my girlfriend was doing other things about the apartment. So I was like, okay, what am I getting myself into? And, then if she asked, I could confidently tell her, hey, this is what it's about. much like those guys in front of the theater. Yes. So basically, I had no idea what I was going to expect when I went into this film. And I found a relationship drama that, in some aspects, yes, I agree, Mike, it doesn't satisfy. But in other aspects, I think it has more to say to kind of leave you with than it does actually say itself. I think it's one of these movies that does a good job of giving you enough to actually talk about and then go forth and have a conversation about. Whether you find the watching of that to be satisfying is kind of, you know, your mileage may vary. I feel like a lot of films, if they don't accomplish even like giving you something to talk about, they've failed on multiple levels. This one, at the very least, gives you something to talk about if you sit down and watch it with somebody, or like we're about to do, talk with other people about it. And so I found it satisfying in that regard. Now, the movie watching itself, I found it fairly well acted. I found it to be mysterious without going overboard. Sure, maybe I want some pulpier elements like Mike has mentioned, but for the most part, I was satisfied by kind of the central mystery. And just simply by kind of the narratives that you can kind of draw out of this film. I really actually like the design elements of this film, despite the fact that I watched the screen. The blacks did not quite do this film justice. I really wish I would have seen this in a theater, not only so I wouldn't have kind of stopped and started at various points, but also because I would have seen some of the design elements a little bit more clear, but also I would have gotten an audience's reaction to this film, because I imagine it's a pretty interesting experience watching it with other people, especially a crowd full of strangers. That being said, again, I think this film is fairly slight. I give it major props just simply for kind of the questions that it leaves you with, and potentially the talking points. As far as a satisfying movie, it again, your mileage may vary.
Yeah, I don't. I don't really know what to say about this movie, because I think it's got some interesting stuff going on. I think it would be really hard to say that it's not a movie that is interesting. At the same time, however, I feel like its execution is mostly wrong. I feel like it hasn't enveloped its story in an aesthetic and narrative style that is fitting for it or really does it justice. And that became a problem for me the longer the film went on. I felt like it was playing coy and kind of being withholding when I feel like it should have just, grabbed a hold of its weirdness and really, really ridden it to the finish. And all of these are accidental euphemisms.
I just want to say I'm nodding vigorously over here.
Thank you for pointing that out, because this is indeed not a visual medium.
This is true.
Yeah, so it was just like, I just kept expecting, like, and I'm the guy who loves the movie Enemy, which this film felt like it had a little bit of that Enemy DNA in it, just because it's, there's a lot of portentous score and lingering shots of stuff that doesn't seem like it means anything. But I feel like in Enemy, there was a very simple, straightforward, bizarre story going on, and all the other stuff was happening in time with it, and therefore it was easier to kind of track the oddity. Whereas in this movie, I never felt like it was really operating well. It was never in like the right order or the right sequence. And thus, I like at the end of it, I was just kind of like, all right, but like, you left so much on the table. Like, there was so much more to do than what you decided. And it's kind of annoying that either in an intellectual or a narrative way that they just decided kind of to coast. So I was upset. I was a little disappointed. I was a little disappointed in The Untamed. But that being said, you probably won't see another film like it. And it's beautifully shot. I think that the story setup is super interesting, and that it's a view of even beyond its more fantastical elements, it's a view of life that you don't often get in film, and that there are aspects of it that are worth watching. I wouldn't tell anyone to run out and see it. It's not best of the year material. It's a curiosity that you won't feel wholly diminished from having gone after, which is probably damning with faint praise, but I definitely think that there's something that you could get out of this, and that it's not bad in a way that would make me persuade people from watching it. So that's that's what I'll stick with it. It's a quantum film. It depends upon the observer. And it was competent and intellectually interesting enough on like a purely academic level and a theoretical level that I think it would be worth seeing, just so you could try to kind of work your way through it yourself. So that's my thoughts on The Untamed. What do you say that we just crash into spoilers and talk about what the fuck is going on here?
I'm good with that.
All right, cool.
Yes.
So spoilers, if you haven't read a single review for this and read the IMDb trivia, or not even the trivia, the IMDb synopsis, or, pretty much literally anything else, then get out now. So spoilers for The Untamed. There is a alien tentacle monster.
Yes, indeed.
That is living in a shack in the woods.
Yes, indeed.
And it'll fuck you right. and
possession vibes there.
Yeah. And it is apparently great and addictive in a way, and it is being hosted by two hippies, and
they're just letting it live off its land, man.
And that stuff is fucking cool.
I kind of wish that, like, you know, in my perfect world, this movie would be
about them.
you would stick with them the entire time, and you would have these bizarre little interludes where, like, someone comes to their house, and then they have a conversation, and then, like, you can kind of do, like, a My Dinner with Andre type of, like, you know, 15-minute vignette, and then you get to the monster banging. And then you can, you know, if you're a competent enough filmmaker, you can make a sex scene say a lot in a character way. And then work up from there. It'll be a picaresque, if you will, with these two alien brothel innkeepers.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I just have so many questions. And, like, how does... Anyway, but so the story is, like, there's a woman, she has a husband, the husband is secretly gay, he is having sex with her brother, so his brother-in-law. The brother-in-law is a doctor who meets a woman who he becomes friends with, and that woman is the person who kind of draws everyone else into the orbit of this creature. And the creature assaults the brother-in-law, and then the husband is charged with that and brought to jail, and the wife is having a hard time with it. And then this woman is like, hey, you should check this thing out. And she goes, and she starts checking that thing out. And at the end of the film, the husband, who is on parole, shoots himself in the leg and is driven out to the barn by this woman, where they find the first woman dead. And then the older alien sex innkeeper is in the hospital because it apparently attacked her as well. And then the wife and the male alien sex innkeeper dump the bodies. And then the woman says, there's a lot of bodies now. And then the movie's over.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk through this.
I feel like there's so, all the interesting stuff is in the margins there, and is like even single lines of dialogue about the nature of the creature.
Yeah. So like what are some of those that you feel are like give us an example, Michael.
Sure. I mean, one thing I really wanted to know about, and I thought the movie was going to delve more into, is whether one, this sex monster is good or bad. And whether, this girl who does eventually draw everyone into the orbit, whether is she being mesmerized by this creature in order to do that? There's also an interesting related to that exact idea that this creature is drawn to people and can make some people happy, but also senses when people have almost like the wrong energy. So there's almost this like weird, psychokinetic.
Psychosexual?
Definitely psychosexual, but I'm trying to say that there is like this weird relationship that the creature almost like
reflects back.
Yes.
Well, yeah, because they say that this new woman, the wife, is good for it.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, yeah, she seems like she's good for him. But like, what does that mean?
And that's interesting idea.
Like, if you think about the brother, the brother-in-law, whatever you want to call him, the doctor, right?
Yeah, the doctor is Fabian. Okay. The husband is Angel. The first woman is Veronica, and the wife is Alejandra.
Yeah, come on, man. You can't call him Angel. It's Angel. It's interesting because his particular relationship is kind of, you know, it's almost like what he reflected back was that he kind of And I don't want to project too much because, you know, this is a gay character, and so I don't want to put his kind of feelings kind of that aren't necessarily expressly state, but I got a sense that he's kind of not too hip about like his own personality and identity. He's not very secure with the fact that he is gay. He's not very, I mean, I guess his family kind of knows. I'm not even sure what's going on there, but it does seem like he's kind of in a depressive state. I mean, the fact that he's fucking his brother-in-law certainly is not a good situation. And
continually
of course,
bullies him.
Yes. Who is abusive, both physically and, you know, verbally, over text and things like that. And so, it's kind of one of those situations where I think he was in a bad situation, and I guess maybe the monster in some ways, and you know, it's interesting that I'm calling it a monster, in some ways is maybe helps him in a way, by basically like giving him release. And I'm not sure what the innkeeper, so wife or whatever you want to call her, the female innkeeper, necessarily like gave off bad juju, but you know, I guess, and then in that way it kind of is interesting because the other woman, the one that escapes, almost has a very addictive personality because she just keeps going back and it's just not good for her. So I think in a lot of ways this film or this kind of creature kind of reflects back what is kind of going on internally. But you know, there is not enough here narratively to consistently support that idea. It's just something that I'm kind of running with in my head, trying to make sense of what happens to the people and why it doesn't treat everybody the same and why it injures some people and it doesn't injure others. Because the film, it must be stated, the film opens with her basically, it opens with her having a sexual interaction with it. And then we see her, Veronica. And then we see her like running away and she's like bleeding and you're just like, what the hell? So
I mean, it seems as though you know what, I don't have an answer.
Yeah,
I was about to pull something out of my ass, but I honestly don't know.
I think beyond the nature of just kind of like how mysterious it is, and you know, whatever you want to divine from that, I think the problem for me specifically is that, as much as Bill, you're right, there is something of a reflection in the way that the creature reacts towards people, these two storylines are kind of separate. Like, they don't really intersect in meaningful ways.
You mean kind of the creature and the caretakers and then everybody else?
Yes, I mean in terms of the conflict with her husband and finding out he's like, that stuff is not really affected by the creature. Like, the creature's kind of always in the background, which is in a way like kind of interesting, but also like doesn't give any of that stuff weight for me, and just makes that whole experience far more disjointed and makes some of that reflective stuff. Like, I thought that was most interesting, for instance, when Veronica is the one married to Angel. Is that correct?
No. Alejandra is married to Angel.
Sorry. When Alejandra finally goes to the monster, and when she comes back and seems to be so much less stressed. Sometimes I think that this director has like just a great sense of being able to communicate just how worn down and how beaten down these people are. Like, just the fact that we see her constantly dealing with the kids, you know, and dealing with, like, doesn't the kid like drop a bowl of cereal on the floor? Am I misremembering? It's been a little while.
Sure. But the big thing is her fucking kid like eats chocolate when he knows he's allergic to chocolate.
Right.
Like, what a little shithead. Like, you asshole. Like, what are you doing to me?
Yeah, like that stuff I feel like is meaningful, but I just don't really understand what they wanted to get at with some of those like taboo desires and how that relates to the monster. Like, I just think that there is such a lack of focus there beyond even like, hey, I kind of want something way more pulpy in the sense of something like Splice, for instance. Mm-hmm. I guess that's my bigger problem, is it just feels like these are two narratives that are you know, forced
melted
to
and blended together.
Yep, in the microwave.
Tossed into a microwave and, you know, baked to perfection. Roasted in a microwave.
Broiled.
Did you guys think they intersected in meaningful ways, or did you find any way to connect those two? Especially in relation to the gay relationship. I think how much that becomes the crux of the story and how much time we spend with Angel seems misguided given where the story actually wants to go.
Yeah, I was really expecting this to be like his story in a way that would involve him like having to come to terms with his latent homosexuality, his clandestine homosexuality, and but then he's like, he's tossed in jail, and then he's kind of gone up to the point that he gets out, and then he shoots himself in the leg and gets murdered by the tentacle sex monster. I don't know. There's so much that's untapped with relation to what this thing is and how it all began. And I just don't know. I feel like there's a lot more to have been said if the movie had trimmed away some of the pretension, some of the extra stuff, if it had played just a little more upfront with what was going on. And, you know, like,
it's a CG tentacle monster.
But like, why does it take so long for everyone to come around to it? Like,
agree. I want to be clear.
What was that?
I completely agree. I'm just saying that it's a point of fact.
We can all state the fact that there is a CGI tentacle monster in this movie. By the way, I gotta say, really well rendered. Like,
yeah, it looks good.
Super convincing tentacle sex in this movie. If you're into that, understood the appeal. Sure, there it is.
We're not judgmental.
Yeah, no. Everyone's got their kink, you know? And this is a thing that I am aware of as being a thing that's out there lurking somewhere on the internet for people to find. And, whatever. Moving forward. To that end, I feel like they don't even really explain the appeal. You know, like in a way that would make this thing like more special than just, well, it's got a lot of tentacles. Like, you know, they don't really, I don't feel like they ever talk about like why it is particularly wonderful. You know, like, is it because you feel held by it? Like, is it because you feel surrounded by it? Is it because it purely overwhelms your senses with a number of appendages like this?
I think it's a sensory overload kind of situation. But I think the other situation is that if you look at the way the crater affects the other animals that kind of are drawn to it, they just go fucking bananas and are super sexual, right? And so I think in that particular situation, your sexual inhibitions just completely go away, and you're just to be you. And so because it has multiple appendages, it's just going to give you the most satisfying sex of your entire fucking life times a million, basically. That's kind of like my reading of it, which is also one of those things where you can start to draw the line and quickly trace it back to heroin or cocaine or some of these other things that just are just so sensory overload that they just, you know, you can't replicate that. And so why does it have an addictive nature? Why do some people get completely and utterly fucked up by it and can't control their lives? And then why can other people take it once or twice and then just move on with their life? Why can some people maintain kind of a steady balance? And why can some people just, you know, just lose, go completely off the rails? And that's kind of what I feel like this film is kind of exploring in a way, is just kind of the addictive nature of, like, what if you just had this sensory overload experience that you could go out and have without basically any cost, it doesn't seem, without any kind of inhibition, and just go have it? Would you just constantly just stay? Or would you kind of try and live a life where you could always have that in your back pocket?
And it's the contrast then there, Angel and Fabian?
Yes. And I think Angel and Fabian are different. I think Angel, I think the monster basically sensed that this guy is just wrong. I think in Fabian's case, I think we specifically do not see his interaction with the monster on purpose. I think he was into kind of maybe some BDSM stuff and stuff like that. And so the monster just kind of A, released him in that way, but B, gave him kind of what he was wanting in more than just one way. So basically beat him half to death, but satisfied him in a way that he wanted. I don't know. That's kind of my reading, because again, this film does not give you enough to confidently maneuver around those kind of scenarios, but I think it gives you enough kind of, just a little enough to kind of go and explore and have that idea.
But I want the movie to have a point of view.
I know.
I'd like at the end for it to be like, and you know, it doesn't have to say something outright, but you know, like, I'd like to be able to say, like, well, the reason that this one person wasn't in some way brutalized by this monster is because they were being honest with themselves, you know, like.
Sure.
I'd like to be able to, cause you know,
well, you write yourself into a corner when you have a character who seems to exist on such, you know, strict, like, moral lines, though. Like, the things that Bill is projecting, which I find his interpretation interesting, but I think if they did communicate something like that outright, I think we'd also be complaining about it.
Well, my thing is, like, they make such a big deal about this thing having, like, a consciousness and a personality, but, like, you know, what if it's not? Like, what if it's like your dog and you project all this stuff onto it, but at the end of the day, like, if you were to die in your house, the dog would eat you, you know?
I love that you've now brought weave that situation into at least two film discussions at this point.
Wait, what was the other one?
It's amazing. I'm not sure, but it definitely was not Gerald's game specifically. It was something else, but yeah, it was definitely something else.
So
because Gerald's game was a little bit too on the nose, I think, for you to mention it at that time. It was definitely something else, and I think it was completely unrelated, and it was just you ranting about, like, how much you love your dog, but it's not a child and it's not a small human, and if you were to just keel over and die and your dog ran out of food, it would just naturally just be like, eh, fuck it, like, I'm gonna eat you.
Basically, like, I have no doubt that were I to die, for like the first day or two, my dogs would, like, stay by my corpse and hope that I would come back, which would be sad, but then once they got hungry enough, they would eat me, and that's fine. I am okay with that. But like, I want I think it would be interesting if at the end of the day, like, this creature was just a fucking chaotic force. Yeah. And then there's your moral. You know, lust, sexual attraction. Like, sure, there are some biological impulses. You're going to go for someone who you think has compatible genes and a healthy body. And so a lot of that manifests itself in our conceptions of what beauty is. But like, at the end of the day, sometimes it's just fucking chaotic. And you know, to quote Al Swearengen from Deadwood, you know, sometimes you just want to fuck something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, sometimes you just got to do that. And so I think it would be weird to see all these people forcing so much on this tentacle creature. And then basically at the end of the movie for the tentacle creature to just shrug one of its many appendages and go, I don't know, I was doing what felt good. But like I said, the movie is kind of attracted to its own withholding. And
yeah.
Therefore there's not enough time spent in an open, honest relationship with the movie and what it's about to really build up more.
I think the closest it comes is Fabian and Alejandra. The whole sequence, which is not a big part of the film, where she finds out then that, you know, her husband is having sex with her brother, like, there's an interesting emotional quandary. Mm-hmm. That is, you know, like, honestly, I thought played out in a dramatically satisfying way. That small part of the movie. But then it's... It's exactly what you're saying, Brian. It is that this is not willing to... It leaves so much on the table. Like, if you present this premise, you have to do something with it. You can't just have your premise be the absence of an explanation.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I think that that's what holds it back. You know, because I like a movie where at the end, you know, any story, most stories have a point, or you can divine a point from them. And when a movie exercises too much of, I'm just going to lay it out for you to decide on your own, without me feeling like the creator has like a deeper point to make, it becomes those movies that I kind of inveigh against every now and then, where I say, like, why not just put this down on a card and then let me work it out? If you're not going to give me your conclusion and then let me decide whether I agree or disagree. Like, if the true point is really just to put that idea in my head and see, like, what I get from turning it around, like, let's just cut to the chase and give it to me, and I'll invite some friends over and open a bottle of whiskey and we'll figure it out.
But you see, like, this isn't even something that I think would appeal to the midnight movie crowd. Like, this isn't like a, you know, like a Mike or, you know, like a J-horror.
Right.
Like, there's not that perversity that would bring in that crowd. And there's not really, again, the style is oddly dry. Even when there is, you know, some glides and stuff, there is, as you're saying, like, I think withholding is the perfect word for the style and the camera work here. The cinematographer is actually a Von Trier regular.
Yeah, I was going to say he did. I think it's a he.
Yes.
The cinematographer did the cinematography for Nymphomaniac.
And Melancholia, and as well as a few others.
Which makes sense, because, I mean, this movie has, like, every once in a while its heartbeat aligns with those films. But I feel like Von Trier is a great example, because, like, that guy fucking embraces the nonsense that he's putting down.
Sure, you know? Sure.
Like, Antichrist, this movie has some Antichrist-ish moments, like we were talking about, The
sure.
Crater, and Melancholia.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely like, if one of those creatures had looked at the camera and said chaos reigns,
yeah,
I would have been like, oh, okay.
Oh, sweet. We're in the same universe.
Yeah. Crossover.
It would have actually made
I'd like to see that Justice League.
You've got the deer that's perpetually giving birth, the fox eating itself. and then like two fucking lizards. And it's just
give it to me.
Wow, I really missed something.
Anyway, but what I was gonna say is like Von Trier has like the audacity to put together something insane and then make a statement. Like and then you can say, like, well, I don't agree with that. Maybe I don't even think that the character agrees with that, but the narrative at least made a decision. Gung-ho. You know?
Yeah.
Like Kirsten Dunst says, you know, life is evil and it's only on Earth, but not for long. And she thinks there's no point to anything. But then at the end of the day, she still helps to make the little teepee. And like, it's kind of a pointless last minute act, but it is like an act of grace and it shows like some compassion. And so you got to wonder, like, has she changed her mind or is she still how she is, but she wants her nephew to be okay or like any of those things. But this movie, it's just kind of like, yeah, I guess like fucking sex makes people do dumb shit and people die because of it.
Sure. There's also something so boring about that ending after the complicated like back and forth relationship they have.
Yeah,
with that monster.
I was really unsatisfied by the ending.
I mean, that monster's still there, right? Just, he's still sticking it to people.
Yes.
But it's just like, I assume so, right? Like, I mean...
No, I'm more about phrasing right now.
Oh, okay. So the monster's still putting on some Al Green and showing people a good time. But like, how are these people who are in this cabin like really... How are they defining to themselves like what's going on? Sure. Like Veronica says, it can only give pleasure. But like, that's not true.
Yep.
We know that's not true.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I don't know if she's being delusional in the way that, like, if you're going back to the dogs, you know, the dog bite you, your dog bites you or someone else and you're like, oh, but he's a good dog. But like someone else's dog like barks at you too loudly and you're like, you got to put that monster down.
Yeah.
You know, so is it like an abusive relationship where it's like, well, he gave me a black eye, but he brought me flowers and then we had like long passionate sex. So it's fine. It's fine. He just got mad because I wore the wrong thing out. Like,
oh, Jesus,
how are we to envision this creature with the conflicting information that we have been given versus, you know, what we see it do?
Again, I think this film just does not give you enough to kind of confidently stand on in either direction. It's almost inviting you to just kind of take from it what you want. In some ways, you could say that this film is that monster.
That's true. You could 100% say this film is that monster.
Okay. I think that's a good time to wrap up.
I agree. Any final thoughts on this before we go? Any like other things we want to say? Has anyone's opinion changed?
No. Okay.
Bill is going to take everything that we said. He's going to pop it in the microwave and he is going to blend it together.
Yes, indeed. So I do want to mention one thing, and maybe this will kind of give you all an idea of, you know, something else, because this film clearly is not bringing enough kind of to the table to confidently have a conversation about like what it is. So I was reading a review that was mentioning that the basis of this film's idea was basically two newspaper articles that the director came across. The first one was one in which a young woman was raped, and shortly thereafter, newspapers started running with the line that she was a slut. The next piece of information that this film seems to be kind of taking some of its themes from is that a construction worker was brutally murdered for being gay, and this is all something that happened kind of in the new in the Mexico area, I guess maybe within the last 5-10 years or something like that. And so those are kind of the two different aspects that this guy basically came across and I guess decided to, I'm going to keep going with it, put in a microwave and then blended together.
and somehow came out with these kind of themes that he's kind of wrestling with in this film. Because, you know, I mean, in some ways, I find it interesting that Angel's whole when he challenges Alejandro, he's like, who are you cheating on me with? Because in his mind, there's no reason that she would ever leave him unless it was for another man, right?
Right.
And it's troubling that he can't see that he just simply does not make her happy. Like another man on the side or not, like, it would not matter. Like, you're just a giant asshole and, like, do not treat me well. And then also, oh, by the way, you cheat on me. Like, what am I supposed to do with you?
Right.
You know? And so, yeah, I think this film, and having that extra information honestly doesn't help me make this film, like, any better in my eyes, but it is extra information that I think maybe helps kind of put some of what this director is wrestling with kind of in context.
Yeah. No, I no, I yeah, that doesn't make me feel like it's any more articulate, but I, Bill, honestly, from what you were talking about, I can see some of your interpretations, and doing even a little bit of brief research. I mean, he's a very divisive director. The main film he's known for is called Heli, which is about corruption in Mexico, and is relentlessly depressing. Yeah. And so it, you know, as if you put this into the framework of trying to discuss, like, social double standards and a, you know, in attitude towards, you know, violence, like, I can kind of understand where this is coming from, but it still doesn't make the film any more successful to me. But I mean, having, knowing that it is inspired by those two stories, I mean, it does make some amount of sense, but, you know, I don't know. Maybe he should have. Maybe this is two films then. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Yes, we need to split it in half and then split it in half again, like the Hobbit series.
Oh, Jesus. No, not another 12-minute sequence of introducing Dory and Fory and Maury and Jory.
Yeah, I think it was
tossing Lily, plates
Mary,
around.
Gary, Barry. Foolin', Chulin', Coolin', and then Thorin Oakenshield.
You know, I'm gonna I'll watch a Lord of the Rings if they add Maury.
It's Maury Povich. He just wanders in. He's as tall as Gandalf.
Oh my god, I love this so much.
Anyway. So having okay. a good time. So imagine the dinner and dancing scene from The Hobbit, but the dinner is replaced by an orgy, and at least one of the dwarves is replaced by a tentacle sex monster.
Whose child is it? Who? You know what? Are we going to find out? Because that's what we really need. That's what the new TV show needs to be about, obviously.
About, it's just a series of Middle Earth paternity tests.
Exactly.
No, so Maury would come in.
His name ended with an Ori. You go find him. Maury's like, all right.
Okay, it could be Gory, Flory, Pori, Chori, Maury, Cory, Lori. What was I going to say? No, it would be Maury walks in and he sees Bilbo Baggins and Frodo Baggins. And then he would obviously make the assumption that they were father and son. And then Bilbo would be like, no, no, no. I'm his uncle. And then Maury would say, so you are not the father. Anyway, I don't know what we're doing anymore. Let's end it. This has been the Film Stage Show. We were talking about The Untamed, and it is out now. And if you would like to win a copy of it, you can give us $1 every episode at our Patreon, patreon.com/thefilmstageshow, and you can be entered to win it. And again, if you do that and you want it, you just got to tell us you want it, and you will have a greater opportunity to win.
Oh, you'll get it.
I can't even. Anyway, just gonna skip swiftly past what just happened, Michael. It's gonna be okay. So yeah, the patreon.com/filmstageshow. Give us your money. We're also brought to you by Mubi, the online streaming cinema. You can get a free trial of Mubi by going to mubi.com/filmstage. And currently, I don't think that they have any tentacle sex movies, but you never know. Maybe at some point, Possession from 1981 will be on there. Not The Possession from 2002. I would, you know, it would be hilarious if someone who walked into a Blockbuster circa 2003 was like, what was that movie with Gwyneth Paltrow and Aaron Eckhart? Possession. That's it. And then they picked up the wrong one. That would have been a hilarious problem for someone to have. And I hope that it happened. But anyway, go to mubi.com/filmstage for a free 30-day trial of Mubi. We will be back next weekend when we will be talking about... Or maybe not next weekend, because it is the Thanksgiving holiday, so who knows what our schedules will look like. But we're going to be talking about...
So many movies.
Coco. Coco, the newest film from Pixar...
And, might have a guess for that one too.
We do.
That one is apparently really, really good. So
that is what I have heard. Now, Bill, you're certain that you're not thinking of The Book of Life, correct?
Yes.
It's never gonna stop being funny. Yes, Coco, the Bug's Life to Book of Life's ants. Yeah,
ants.
I don't know what's happening.
That's a different movie.
Aunts, and it's just a bunch of aunts. Oh, my sister's son is the best.
It's the sequel to Sisters. Yeah. All right, I'm done.
let's put a bullet in the head of this podcast and get out of here. So let's tell the fine people at home where we can be found between now and the next time. Let's start with you, Bill Graham.
You can find me on Twitter at CableBFG, and then you can also find me on our Patreon Slack channel, where I'll be trying to mix things up and defend myself from having a meltdown on the microphone.
Yeah, because people are still begging for you to have a meltdown. All right, let's do it. Michael Snydell, where can we find you between now and the next time?
You can find me on Twitter at Snydell, where I am trying to slowly wind down my watch list for 2017.
Yeah,
even though
it's never going to work.
100 movies, which is never going to happen.
There will always be another film. I've given up the pretext that I might be able to get through most of the films. I'm just being hyper selective. Speaking of me being hyper selective, you can follow me on Twitter at Brian J. Rowan, Letterboxd the same. And yeah, don't look for me on any of the social networks. I don't want to know you. find my personal site, dearfilm.net. And of course, I write for the filmstage.com, where I currently have a review of Justice League up. So check that out.
Woo!
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Bill, that was a perfect opportunity for you to say yeah, yeah. And you
said, I know. I'm sorry.
Moron.
You guys anyway, big Usher fans?
That's. Yeah! Anyway. Fucking, it's over. This whole thing is done. Join us next time. We're talking about Coco.